At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm John Batchelor, visiting with John Hardy, my colleague of Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We've started with the battlefield and the tactics and some of the weapon systems. But certainly a major weapon system is negotiating table. Conversations these last weeks look to Mr. Trump leading a way to a table for bilateral, trilateral conversations. Since then, the foreign minister of Russia, Mr. Lavrov, has gone on American television rejecting a meeting and at some time remarks rejecting Mr. Zelensky as a negotiator. This is all very discouraging to Mr. Trump, who said that they have maybe 2 or 3 weeks before he makes another decision. John, what is the contribution now of NATO? Is it adequate for air defense? I know that was a big priority.
Right. So since mid-July, the listeners may remember that Trump's announcement with the NATO Secretary General saying that NATO allies would pay for weapons for pay the United States for weapons taken from U.S. stocks to give to Ukraine. That initiative has gotten off the ground with now a handful of $500 million packages funded by NATO allies, including for air defense. We have Germany committing to provide a couple more Patriot fire units to Ukraine. So that will be a big help. So I think that is a bright spot. On the last episode, last week, we were recording right as President Trump was meeting with European leaders and Zelensky at the White House. I think that meeting was a good show of unity, kind of helped counter some of the tactical diplomatic gains the Russians made in their Alaska summit. One big kind of do out to come out of that meeting at the White House was President Trump giving a more firm commitment that the United States would play some role in European-led security guarantees for Ukraine. We have some reporting today out of the Financial Times giving a little more clarity about what's being discussed. So reportedly, there'll be some U.S. ISR, intelligence surveillance, reconnaissance support provided, command and control support, air defense assets as well. We'll see if we have U.S. aircraft actually operating in Ukraine, but that is a possibility. So that's been something the European, this kind of more firm commitment has been something the Europeans have been looking for quite some time to give more confidence to countries considering contributing to this so-called reassurance force in Ukraine. So that's an important ongoing conversation. The other piece with the talks with the Russians has not been making much headway. Coming out of that White House meeting last week, Trump was touting a bilateral meeting between Putin and Zelensky that Putin supposedly had agreed to. The Kremlin has since thrown cold water on that, basically saying, we'll meet with Zelensky when we, have a more firm agenda. What that really means is we'll meet with Zelensky once Kyiv swallows our very maximalist demands. We've discussed the territorial aspect of those demands, but there are kind of a host of others, which I think to the Kremlin are more important, related to Ukraine's neutrality, demilitarization, what have you, essentially designed to make Ukraine a vassal state to Moscow, which President Putin deems one of the root causes of the war.
In your measure, John, given all this incredible detail, is the Kremlin in a position to be satisfied with the battlefield as it is now if it's frozen by a ceasefire?
So the Russians are still well short of the minimal military objective they set, which is capturing the rest of the Donbass. That being said, I think for Putin, this war is not about gaining a little extra territory in eastern Ukraine. It's really about what I just alluded to, which is what he calls the war's root causes.
Right.
In his mind, that means Ukraine's attempts to escaped the Russian sphere of influence and his broader grievances about the post-Cold War order, you know, NATO enlargement, et cetera, et cetera. He's been railing about this for decades now. And so that's really what I think ultimately matters to him. The territory is kind of second order in importance.
And
that being said, I think, you know, the Russians, they are not only well short of achieving their territorial goals. I think that, you know, they just don't have the leverage, the military means to force Ukraine to accept these kind of draconian demands that Putin is insisting on. And I think Putin also overestimates President Trump's ability to kind of coerce Ukraine into accepting those demands. And right now, I think President Trump isn't terribly inclined to kind of force Ukraine. You know, he said he'll allow Kyiv he'll defer to Kyiv to decide matters of territory. I think that's the right approach. Hope it continues.
And so I just want to make sure, 30 seconds, Russia is not in position to accept the battlefield, the front lines as it is now. That's not enough for the Kremlin. Is that correct?
They're demanding much more territory than they, you know, have been able to seize or right. can seize. But I think ultimately what matters most to Putin is, you know, Ukraine, the broader question of Ukraine and kind of making Ukraine a vassal state. So I think there's some room for Russia to compromise on territory. But, you know, their other demands are, I think, equally right. unacceptable to Ukraine. And so, you know, the Russians aren't going to be able to achieve those, likely.
John Hardy, Details, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Thank you, John.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.